Hello and welcome to Roots on Adobe Radio. My name is Danny and I'm here with...
My name is Slade.
Yep. And we're part of a band called Ann Arbor. We are here talk about the history of the band, how we got here, where we're headed, all that kind of stuff. So Slade, why don't you tell us how the band began in the first place? How did it all start?
Well, shoot, long, long time ago, let's see. I would say probably back when we were just in middle school. Me and a couple other guys loved music, and we all became friends, like, while we went to school, not knowing that we were going to be in a band or anything. It was me, Mike, and Greg. We went to school together. We ended up going to, like, summer school in the summers and whatnot. But in the summers, we'd also go to, like, all these crazy shows. Like, we had a show back in the day called Edgefest that we all went to. It was, like, a little mini Warped Tour for the radio station that was in Phoenix. And we'd all go to those. We'd all see these bands play that we really loved. And we'd always dream about playing, but we never really spoke about it. Well, one of these days while we were coming back from summer school, I forget who it was, but they were like, hey, we should start a band. You know, we like going to these shows. Let's start a band. And none of us had really played any instruments. I definitely did not. I just had taken singing lessons prior, which was just super random. Ended up taking singing lessons for my mom because she was like, you're always singing around the house, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to throw you singing lessons. And I was like, singing lessons are for girls, blah, blah, blah. little did I know I'd be in a band shortly after, but he basically was like, so Greg, we're all in the car together, and he's like, hey, start a band. You all play the drums, you play bass, you sing, you do this, you do that, and he like assign everybody a part. Give it time, so like a year later.
Get some crappy instruments and start figuring it out.
So basically it took like, you know, a year or so for us to all get whatever we wanted. We asked for Christmas, and we all get these crappy kits and crappy guitars and whatever, but it worked. And next thing you know, we're in a garage, in Greg's garage, and literally not knowing anything. We didn't know what the hell we were doing. We just started playing. And I think we first started just playing like cover songs, like Green Day cover songs and stuff like that. Just like Blink-182 stuff. Because we really didn't know.
Basic song you could play back then, as long as you knew.
Yeah, seriously.
As long as you knew a couple power chords, you know.
It's all it took, you know. And especially us as all beginners, like, we didn't know what we were doing. We didn't know how to write a song. So we were just covering stuff. And one thing led to another. I mean, I didn't play bass at the time. We had a girl bass player. Her name was Jess. And she was from a different school. She went to like a different high school along with Adam. Adam was a little bit older than us. So he was always hanging around the guys around the neighborhood. And we were like finished band practice. And one day, you know, he's like, hey, I want to join a band. Talking about how he was in a local band. And one day he like left his band or they kicked him out or something. And we were like, dude, let's ask him to be in our band. So then Adam joined, and then we had the full team. So it was Greg on drums, Mike on guitar, Adam on guitar, Jess on bass, and then I was a lead singer. And basically...
What are like the first shows you start playing?
So I think the first show that we ever played was at Skateland. And it was super ridiculous. Like we did good. We like sold it out, but it was because it was like our first show and like all of our friends and our parents' friends and everybody was there.
Yeah.
It was at Skateland. They paid us like $10 and we bought a pizza with it.
Hell yeah.
We all looked super ridiculous. But by that time we had our show, like we had already written our like original song. So we were like a small little punk band writing something about like Disney Channel and having ADD in school and how recess was cool and stuff, like literally stupid stuff like that. But it was cool. Like it was definitely from the ground zero, literally ground zero to the top, not to the top, but to the start, you know, which is crazy.
Yeah. And then when does it start to get like a little more serious?
Like serious? Start
like really writing songs and recording and playing some bigger shows.
That was like middle school when we played that show. So I think right when all of us kind of got into high school, I think we all started kind of taking it a little bit more serious. Like our like freshman to sophomore year on the weekends, we were taking trips to like California and playing shows at like the Roxy. And then we'd go to Texas or New Mexico. And then we'd go up to Colorado. And then just on the weekends, we make like 3-day trips out of it. We didn't have a van or anything. You know, we were taking like a truck. Really throwing everything in the back of a truck and just driving and playing shows. And eventually, I think we did like a little tour without a record label. Like we just did like the West, just the coast. So we went from like Washington down to Phoenix. And that was on the Home Is Where You Make It tour. That was with like this super emo band, but everybody loved them. Maybe some people will recognize this name, but they're called the Scene Aesthetic.
Oh yeah.
Scene Aesthetic and then Danger Radio. So that was like our first, like probably, it was probably like five shows. And I think the Somerset and Ayahuasca was like right after that. But those were like our first tours that we ever did. And they weren't long. They were like a week long. But
at that age and when you're first getting into it, that's just huge.
And I was thinking about my parents. They like let a bunch of teenagers just hit the road.
Have fun. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Like basically, you know.
And so like, you know, once you're traveling, playing shows as a, especially that young, like that's got to put you on the map a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, playing those shows on the weekends and getting out there definitely put us on the map. We definitely started getting some record label attention, which was great. Hopeless and a couple of the labels hit us up. We ended up going with Hopeless. We loved the vibe of them. We loved everything that they were kind of offering to us. So right after we signed to Hopeless, we were like getting right out of high school. So it took quite a bit of time to just kind of get the ball rolling on our own. But it literally didn't take much. I feel like it was just us writing and just kind of following what we wanted to do and our parents letting us, and it eventually led to us getting signed. So right out of high school, we signed to Hopeless Records, and we went on our first tour around the whole U.S. And that's when I became the bass player for Ann Arbor. So in that first tour, I forget who was with, but we were meeting up in Florida to do like a big tour called the Take Action Tour. So it was like a mini tour to get to the big tour. And it's supposed to be super sick, but we got to Florida and we had already played like, you know, 2 weeks of shows. And our bass player, Jess, was just like, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to go home. I miss my family. I don't want to be in a band. Like just completely like a 360 on us. So we flew her home and we had a show the next day. So we were kind of scrambling and I was like, well, I guess I kind of know how to play. I'll just kind of learn the parts. So we made it happen. Yeah. I learned the parts and the next day, you know, I was the bass player. That's kind of how it worked. I mean, I wasn't great, but I definitely have learned a lot since that day. So
yeah, got it done.
Crazy, man. Crazy. So let's see. After that tour, we did the Take Action tour with Q's We Aim For, and that was like right around probably one of our big tours, you know, that kind of started putting us on the map.
And what, like, so you signed to a label at this point, right?
We had just signed to Hopeless Records, and they have a tour called the Take Action, and they definitely helped us out, though. You know, they gave us a great deal, and they basically, it's not like it is now, like you have the internet to kind of just throw everything out there. Like, they had a whole team and everything to kind of boost us, so we'd never seen anything like that. Definitely a different story now that the internet's around, you know. Quite the journey.
Quite a journey. And so start playing shows, start making fans now. And what is, I mean, what's all that like? Like, you go from playing shows in front of just your friends, and now you're in different cities you haven't been to, playing shows in front of people you've never met. Like, were you guys all scared about it? Did you just kind of say, fuck it, let's do our thing?
Right, yeah. So, like, watching the crowds grow night by night was crazy. I mean, we were used to playing, like, that first tour that we did, just, like, down the West Coast. There was no kids there. But we were kind of used to it, and we kind of, like, we kind of anticipated there not to be a lot of kids because it was our first time, you know, traveling and doing this. So we took it as, you know, a learning curve, and we went in with our heads up and our minds open, and eventually this crowd started getting bigger the more that we played. So by the time that we signed to Hopeless, we were like, I would say selling out like Chain Reaction. So Chain Reaction is what, like, maybe 300, 350 or something, 400. So we were like selling out Chain Reaction. I think that was like one of our hometown venues, even though we're from Phoenix, like they called it one of our home.
And what was like one of the first times you realized that there were some people out there in the audience that knew the words?
You know, when they start singing the words to the song, it's like, it kind of hits you and you're like, oh my gosh, people actually like the band, you know? And then all of a sudden the parts where the music stops and you're just singing, everybody else is singing it for you. And then that completely changes it. 'Cause you're like, oh my God, like I'm running the show now, you know, it's really cool. And the bigger the crowds are, you know, the more fun you have, the more energy there is.
It's more for some people, like, feed off of and yeah. reflect back at your audience. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's different, but I think for us as the band Ann Arbor, I think we feed off of a bigger crowd for sure. So, you know, watching all these people start to like us and buying merch and asking us to sign stuff and take pictures for us. I feel like we kind of took advantage of it because we just were so young and didn't really know. We were just like, oh, this is what's supposed to happen. You know, you play the shows and people come to listen to the music.
Yeah, and you
looking
just
back on it,
got kind of thrown into it pretty quickly. So
yeah, definitely. And, you know, looking back on it, it's like, it's cool, man. We definitely started from the ground to the top. And
I mean,
everybody that we met along the way, it's crazy.
Started as just a straight up rock band. And
in a garage, like
rock band in a garage,
not knowing anything about music, really just taking a chance from watching too many drive through record DVDs.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Well, I mean, this is where it all started. We're going to get into a little bit more, but let's, you know, hit a song from the first EP, Free Your Mind, which was the first EP, with Hopeless Records. And I think it'd be fitting to play Let the Games Begin. So, here we go. We'll be right back.
Here we go.
It's a game, she's a blame, but who's keeping score?
All right, so we're back. Let's get back into where we left off. We were talking about Ann Arbor as they start going on these legitimate tours and playing bigger shows. So who are you out on the road with?
We're doing it, Mom. Okay, so we are in the year of 2009. We had just signed a Hopeless Records.
And you guys are how old at this point?
Ooh, 2009. How old am I? I'm like 18. Right? Does that make sense?
18, 19,
I think.
Somewhere around there.
Somewhere around that age as a young lad. So none of us could drink. You know, we were just kind of taking it very seriously. By this time, we'd probably done like 5 or 6 little tours before we went on tour with this, the Megan Dia, that it was called the Take Action Tour. It's like a Hopeless Records tour that they give back to the community. Really, really cool. But we had done quite a bit of touring since then. So like I said, we were playing small clubs, like 500 cap, you know, doing well. But then we boosted it with that Take Action Tour to like 500 to 1,000. So we started killing it, and we actually started getting better tours. So right after that, we jumped on a tour with The Cab, The Somerset, Ayahuasca, and The Secret Handshake. And that was like another huge one for us. I think that was like Fearless and Hopeless teamed up. You could see flyers everywhere. All over the internet, you know, they did a great job.
I mean, what's it like going from, you know, playing these smaller gigs just in front of kids and just, you know, kind of whatever you can get to now, like you're playing in front of real crowds and people who paid to be there and people who are excited to find new bands and discover you guys?
Yeah, so I'll be honest, it happened very quickly for us. So, you know, playing smaller shows to going to bigger shows, obviously, the fans were getting more interactive, which was really cool, seeing people starting to sing our songs, because, you know, we had a small dream about this, and then all of a sudden you start playing shows and you're like, oh my gosh, we have like, I saw like 3 or 4 people singing in the crowd, and like that stuff right there will just like make your whole night.
Yeah, and you know, people start buying your merch and
asking us to sign stuff. Yeah. And
being like, hey, do you want to smoke a joint with us?
Yeah, basically, like we were getting so much weed and meeting so many new people. I will say that I wish I took advantage of, you know, that type of stuff more, because when you're so young and it happens so quickly, it's just kind of like, oh yeah, this is what's happening. Maybe this is what's supposed to happen, and you kind of just lose it all in the moment. With that being said, I mean, the shows were great. We absolutely crushed it every night. It's just like it can get to you quick, you know, the partying and stuff and all the honey is out there on tour. I mean, you can lose yourself very quickly. But like I said, none of us could drink. So we were all like we were hiding the consumptions that we were doing. We were trying to be very low key about it. Touring with like 30-year-old dudes is like pretty crazy. I mean, I feel like it made us grow up very quick.
And I'm sure they like gave you guys shit or pranked you, or like what's a good, do you have any good stories off the top of your head about one of those?
I mean, I'll tell you, this isn't even that big of a deal, but like when I first started playing bass, I won't tell you the band, but we had, you know, bass cabinets on stage and they're like, oh yeah, can we use your guys' bass cabinet? And I was like, sure. And I played my bass cabinet on like the opposite side that normal bass players would play. Apparently, I guess stage left is where they usually set up. I would put it on stage right. And one of the older dudes was like, hey man, you know that it's not, you're not supposed to do that. It throws off the sound, blah, 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 on stage. And I'm just like looking at him like, dude, you just asked me to use my gear and now you're giving me shit about where I'm putting my bass cab. Like we were like the little kids on tour sometimes, but it's also because we were, you know, we were super new and we didn't really know all the rules of the road jumping in with these dudes that have been touring for 5 or 6 years, maybe longer. But yeah, so made us grow up quick. Got to meet a lot of people. I think, let's see, right after that tour, we did a few more with, like, our friends. So we were friends with, like, this Providence set of Seattle. We got to tour with one of my favorite bands back in the time, Stray Light Run. I used to love that band. We did a tour with them and Lydia, which was awesome. We did, like, a little bit of Warped Tour here and there in, like, 2009. But I think our biggest tour at following all of this would be Warped Tour, I think, in 2010. So we got to jump on like this massive festival and it once again like completely revamped the band and like took us to a whole nother level. At some points we were playing main stage because they were pushing us up from, you know, the Hurley stage or whatever we were on, just to get bigger crowds. So at that point, with 2010, we had a major buzz and we were ripping it, man.
And did you guys do that tour before or after the first full length came out? Was it The Words You Don't Swallow?
Ooh, The Words You Don't Swallow. That one came out in 2010, so I think it came out during Warped Tour, if I'm not mistaken. It was like a release during things, so we were like trickling songs out, and it was either out or had been released right outside of that Warped Tour. So people were, you know, that's even another cool thing, like you release a record and like the next day people already know the words to the songs, which is like fucking crazy. But as young as we were, you know, we were just like, wow, this is, we're doing it. You know, we had no idea, where we were. And yeah, like it's crazy when you're in it, you don't like really understand what's happening until you're like, wow, these people do like me. They do like our music. They do want to see us. They do want to meet me, which is the weirdest, even weirder part about it is they want to meet you and get your signature and stuff. So that was like a really, really big opportunity for us. But I do remember something specific on that tour. So right before we went to Warped Tour in 2010, that summer, we had the whole record done. We did that record with Mike Green. So another staple record for us, which is like, I think a lot of people like it, is it had that Mike Green sound to it. But this record was just about to come out and we got an offer to go to Japan. And it was our first time, obviously, I think, going anywhere out of the country. I think we might have done right before that like a UK tour, but from going to UK for like a week and then boom hitting Japan for like a week, it was crazy. So anyways, long story short, we go to Japan and we're there for like, you know, a couple days getting to know the place. Our mentor Masa, really, really nice dude, was showing us around the city. We played one show, I think it was like an acoustic show, and we had another, this was in Tokyo, we had another show in Osaka the next day. So, of course, you know, everybody's partying and stuff after the show, we're with the Somerset, everybody's kicking it, having a good time. Everybody gets drunk. I specifically remember that night getting back to the hotel, and Greg, our drummer, was laying in the elevator, and the doors were trying to shut, but his legs were hanging out, he was just laying down, and they're like trying to shut, and they just weren't working. And this lady that worked at the hotel, she's like, you, come. Like, something's happening. And I was like, oh, what the fuck? You know, it was late. We're all fucking wasted. We go over to the elevator, and Greg's just passed out, literally asleep on the ground. The elevator's trying to shut on him. And we're like, okay, dude, whatever. So we get him up. We take him to the room. We all go to sleep. Call it a night. The next day, we take a 8-hour bus ride to Osaka. And in Japan, they have like big buses and stuff. Yeah, and well, for sure, everyone's hungover. But in Tokyo, it's kind of like, or maybe in Japan, everywhere, it's kind of like Vegas where you can just drink anywhere. They don't card you or anything. Like you can get a like booze out of a vending machine. So they had these things. I think they're called like Zeros, where they're like, it's like Sprite mixed with like, I don't know, it's like vodka. They had like orange juice and vodka. Stuff like that, and coffees and stuff. Well, Greg, we all got up. We were all getting ready to go. And Greg was like, hey, I'm gonna get a drink. And he goes over to the vending machine and gets a drink. And he wanted an orange juice, but he gave him like a vodka orange juice. And we were all like, oh, that's funny, whatever. A little hair of the dog in the morning, nothing's going to hurt. So, you know, a couple hours roll by, and we stop off at this rest stop. And in Japan, they have like big rest stops that are kind of like America, because there's nowhere to really stop unless you go to a rest stop. So there's like, they have a bunch of stores and stuff. So we all get out. We're on our way to Osaka. We all get out at this rest stop, and we're all looking around, buying stuff, treats, snacks, whatever it is. And I'm walking back to the bus, and I look over, and I see somebody's on the ground, and I see like kind of like a huddle of people. So walk over to the huddle of people, and I realize that that's Greg on the ground, and there's like a little bit of blood on his mouth.
Oh, God.
I know, and I was just like, what in the fuck happened? I tried to get, you know, people that were with him to find out what happened, but none of them really spoke any English. And they were doing weird stuff. Like, they took like his beanie off and like put it underneath his head as a pillow. I mean, that's fine, but like one of the ladies was like trying to take his belt off, and I was like, everybody needs to back the fuck up. what the fuck is going on? This guy, this lady's trying to take his pants off or something? I had no idea. So, of course, we make sure that he's okay. We're all freaking out. You know, this has probably never happened to poor Masa ever, banned from out of the country, something getting hurt.
Yeah.
So he's on the ground. He's kind of unconscious. He's awake, but he's, like, just really out of it. I had to call his mom in that moment, and I'm like, hey, you know, Greg, we don't know what happened. We think that he fell, but his jaw is very swollen. So after that, they called an ambulance. The ambulance came, picked him up. And Mike, our guitar player, we had to decide who wanted to go with Greg to the hospital. We had a show that night, so me and Adam stayed to play the acoustic show. And then Greg and Mike went with Greg to the hospital. So we made it to Osaka. They went to the nearest hospital, whatever that happened. Then we find out that Greg needs, like, he basically shattered his jaw. So he shattered the left side of his jaw completely up by, like, his ear. God. All the way down to, like, the center of his jaw. So he must have just completely, no hands, just fell right onto the concrete. We figured out that he needed, like, 7 or 8 staples in his jaw, and he needed to get surgery ASAP. But the thing about that is, if he got surgery in Japan, he would have to stay in Japan for, like, I think it was, like, 6 weeks or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because he can't fly after surgery. So we had to decide in that moment if we were going to cancel the tour or we were just going to play acoustic, and two of the guys flew home. And we decided that it would be best if we decided to cancel. So we decided to fly home from Japan after Greg broke his jaw. He was actually able to fly home. They actually let him. He didn't have to get surgery. He got surgery in America, which is probably better on his part.
That must have been a really fun flight for him.
Yeah. Dude, I cannot. I remember he was just like in so much fucking pain. But yeah, that was like our first real overseas experience. And we didn't even get to play the whole tour. Like, I remember we got back and AZ Central, which is like Arizona's like news central place.
Yeah.
They're like, band Ann Arbor goes on their first tour and blows it. And I'm just like, damn, what happened? Harsh. You know? Yeah. And it was just like, man, we really started need to be more careful. And I think at that moment we all were like, okay, this is serious. Doing something like, you know, partying and stuff isn't really worth it if we're going to get hurt.
No.
So yeah, right after that, Greg actually played that summer 2010 Warped Tour with a wired jaw. Like, it was completely wired shut.
What, so did he just have to, like, have a blender with him?
Dude, he was making smoothies and, like, eating soup. Poor guy. I mean, luckily we were on a bus that year, but if we were not on a bus, I don't know what that guy would have done. He would have had to go home. We would have had to find a new drummer. I don't even know.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was a very traumatic experience for the band. And I think after that, it was kind of like a wake-up call. Like, hey, let's try to kick this into gear and actually do it right. I mean, who knows if we'll ever be invited back to Japan again at that point. We were like, do we just blow it? Does he hate us? Does Masa not like us? You know, it was just this. Everybody was pretty upset about it. But needless to say, we went on Warped Tour. We crushed Warped Tour, and then right after that, in the fall, we did a tour with Versa Emerge, which was like our headliner. So we did our first headliner that we swapped off dates with Versa Emerge and us, which was also really, really cool. Because then at that point, you know, we just got off Warped Tour. We had this fat buzz. We were selling shows out. I mean, almost every night.
Yeah, if I recall, I mean, that for me as an outsider at the time, like, was when I remember being like, wow, like, this Ann Arbor is like really starting to blow up. They're starting to really become something, because you guys put out a music video for Gypsy Woman.
Yeah.
Which was on that 2010 record you did with Mike Green, The Words You Don't Swallow. And yep. I saw the video, and like at the time that was insane production value compared to what you could do, you know, at home with some friends or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the name just like was becoming somewhat of a household name, at least back, you know, in our hometown and stuff. So it was just, that was cool to see.
Yeah.
Let's take a little break right there. Let's actually play that song, Gypsy Woman.
Yeah.
Check that out, and we'll get back into the next chapter of the history.
We'll see you soon. That gypsy woman's got me under control. She fed me lies.
cast her spells. That gypsy woman is really ringing my bells. And to hell I will go. She took me to my knees and now she's got me praying. Save me, she's a liar. I can't see not tie the rope. She's got wrapped around her finger. Think I lost the last bit of my self-control. I can feel the hole that she left. Gypsy woman, wrap me up my best. She said she couldn't stay. Gypsy woman wore to my knees and now she's got me praying.
So, we just told the story of Greg breaking his jaw in Japan.
Yes.
And then you guys came home, did your first headlining tour.
Yes.
And then where are we at now?
So, Greg broke his jaw. We did Warped Tour with Greg with his wired jaw shut. Right after that, we jumped on with First Emerge called the Vultures Unite Tour, one of our first headlining tours that we swapped off with First Emerge. So, this one was big for us because we were selling out rooms, making money, selling merch, and kind of really doing it at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, getting to close out the show.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, we'd been on tour for like half a year at that point, so maybe even longer. So everybody was really feeling it right around then. And
dialed in too. Like, oh, that's totally such a thing that I don't think everybody totally understands, but like, that's usually a thing for me whenever we hit the road is like the first couple nights, first two shows, three shows, I'm still getting my sea legs a little bit. But then after you nail a couple shows, it's just in you and you're dialed in. And like
you don't even have to think about it.
Yeah, you don't have to think about what part's coming next. Oh, yeah.
It's just like it's just muscle memory at that point.
Your hands just do it. And
so, that's another thing. You can always tell when bands are like locked in. They've been on tour for a while because they just sound so fucking good.
Oh, yeah.
So let's see. Did that headline tour. Right after that, we jumped on another big, big tour with A Rocket to the Moon, Valencia, Runner Runner, and Go Radio. We made really good friends with the band Valencia. They became like some of our best friends. Honestly, some of the coolest guys we've ever toured with. And probably one of the better bands that is around and kind of was around in that time. Those guys were super good. But that was an awesome tour. I remember, I think the last show was in Boston. I'll never forget this. And it wasn't Justin Bieber, but it was like a kid star that played before us. Like, it was like a day show. And there was like,
was it Aaron Carter?
I'm not even, No. But honestly, it was like around that time. Like,
yeah.
Like I remember little kids, like, dude, I'm telling, like, I have two kids, you guys, one's 4, one's 1.5. Like there was kids that young with signs saying that they love this kid. Wow. And like, we showed up to like put all our gear in there and we're like, oh shit, there's another show in here. So we stuck around and watched, and it was like this little kid. Oh, Grayson Chance. That's his name. Grayson Chance.
Grayson Chance. All right. Shout out. Look Grayson him up. Chance.
He might be still around. Who knows? But anyways, that was pretty cool. The venue was at, it was at the Patriots field. So it was in Foxborough, New England or Boston, whatever it was. And like, we got to go on the field and check out where the Patriots play. That was probably one of the coolest experiences. I've done some pretty cool shit, but that was pretty rad. So after that, we were like, oh, okay, do we take a break? Blah, blah, blah. Well, we get an offer to go back to Japan. So this time the tour was a little bit better. we actually got to finish it. This one was called Beyond the Blue Tour, with Mayday Parade, the Somerset, With the Punches, and Destin. And this time we actually got to like go around the city and like experience Japan and like the shows. And man, the difference between shows in Japan and here in America are just like night and day.
What makes it so different?
So even just, you know, playing the show, and so you play the song. When you're done with the song, everybody cheers, right? When you're done playing the song in Japan, everybody's silent. And they're just like, listen, they just want to hear what you're going to say and like hear what you're going to do. Nobody talks. It's like super disrespectful to talk in the middle of bands when they're not playing. It was like the craziest thing that I had experienced, because usually I'm used to like people flicking me off or talking shit or being like, I love you, or I love Ann Arbor, yeah, or whatever the fuck it is, you know? I mean, take into consideration, we just got off Warped Tour, and when you play Warped Tour,
people are going bananas.
People are going constantly. Bananas, but also, like, you're playing after, you know, a metal band, and then after the metal band is a pop band. So all these different fans are mixed in to one another, and not all of them really like pop, and not all of them really want to listen to it. So if they're, this would happen, you know, we'd have to go on after Stick to Your Guns or before Stick to Your Guns. I could remember it perfectly. And these fans are like, fuck you guys, you know, just looking at me with the middle finger. I'm just like, fuck you too, bro. Like, sorry that you don't like our music. I don't know what you want me to say. Sorry, I'm not going to do it, you know.
Yeah, I didn't fucking create the list of bands that was going to play in what order.
Yeah, sorry. Fault, sorry, dude, we're playing before your band, dog. I'm just trying to
I'll put it in drop D. Just give me a break.
Well, dude, we should have just done a random breakdown, bro, at the end. That would have been so fucking funny.
Right.
So yeah, the difference is night and day. If you ever have the chance, any band members playing, if you've ever been, or if you have the chance to do in Japan, just go. You know what I'm talking about. It's a beautiful, beautiful country.
I imagine it's what, like, I don't know, we recently did a live stream concert for a college, and like, that was such an interesting thing, being on a stage and like actually performing, and but there's nobody there.
Yeah.
Dude. It kind of sounds like what it felt like.
It was awkward because, you know, nobody was cheering, and we were like, did we suck? Like, do they like it? But of course, you know, after they'd come and be like, oh my God, you guys were so good. And, you know, there's girls trying to give me their number. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Yeah. Japan. I'm like, you can't call me on that. Yeah, I'll never forget that, man. And we hope to go back soon, but that was the last time that we went to Japan. So that was in 2010. And then, boom, right after that, we went on another Warped Tour. But the thing about this one this time, actually, we didn't go on Warped Tour. We actually had a bunch of other ones in between that. So we did the Zoomies Couch Tour, which was dope because we got a bunch of free stuff from Zoomies. This was in the summer of 2011. Like, they literally let us go into the stores, like, hey, pick out whatever you guys want.
Wow, that's incredible.
That one was cool because there was, like, skateboarders a part of it. Everybody was, like, it was kind of like a mini Warped Tour. It was, like, a 3-week thing. That was with Forever the Sickest Kids. That was super dope. Right after that, in that same summer, we did a co-headlining with Valencia, Conditions, and Neighbors. We, like, really loved those guys in Valencia, so we figured that maybe we could, you know, go on tour. So we did a full U.S. with those guys, and that led us into the winter of 2012, which we did another tour with Mayday Parade, We the Kings, and Downtown Fiction. So you could see that, like, all of our tours were kind of, like, they kind of started out a little bit smaller, and they kind of were getting bigger. Like, Mayday Parade, We the Kings, Forever the Sickest Kids, you know, Somerset, Rock to the Moon, all those bands are pretty, pretty big, and that didn't start until, like, 2011. So it took us a minute to get to that level, but once we did, we were definitely welcomed, and it was great. I mean, some of the best touring of my life were in some of those years. So let's see. Mayday Parade after that. In December, we jumped on with Never Shout Never. Chris was a good guy. Got to meet him. We knew him from Warped Tour before, so kind of just like a homie, just hanging out. And then we jumped on another Warped Tour, but this is where I was going in 2013. We had been doing so much touring at that point that I think everybody got a little bit burnt out. So from December of 2012 to summer of 2013, we took a big break. And that's when everybody was kind of like, hey, I don't want to be in the band anymore. I don't want to do this. So at that point, everybody ditched me. And I was going into Warped Tour 2013 by myself. And I didn't know if I wanted to do it. So I had to, you know, take a couple weeks to think. And my managers were like, we'll find you people to play with you. It'll be sick. And we'll get it done. And like 2 weeks later, I got an offer to go to Australia to play Australian Warped Tour. So I was like, shit, I really need to get a band together to do this because I would love to do both Warped Tours. So I got, I got Josh from Every Avenue to play guitar for me. I got Steven from Go Radio to play drums. He's our drum player. Awesome dude. Both awesome guys. I got our roadie guy. His name's Justin. He was playing guitar for me. And then I just took over on singing and playing the bass. So
what's that like now being out on the band, or like being solo in a way, but with all these new members?
Dude, it was kind of a dark time, I'll be honest, because I felt like my best friends had just kind of given up on me and on the project that we had basically spent our whole childhood prepping for, and we were doing it, you know, like they didn't really see it back then, but we were 100% doing it, and the buzz that we had was incredible. So to really just drop it there and call it quits was very shocking. It was scary, and I was very unsure because I didn't know how this new band was going to be. You know, I wasn't sure how they were going to play. I wasn't sure if they're going to have fun. It just kind of seemed very Frankenstein to me. You know, it's like people go to see your favorite band. They want to see everybody in the band. They don't want to see just the singer.
Yeah.
So it was disheartening for sure, but the fans enjoyed it. I did a thing where I would let, you know, a kid come up on stage and play bass with us. And
nice.
We really tried to get the crowd interaction as much as we could, and it worked. But yeah, so we did that whole tour. and then right after that, we went to Australia. And Australia was sick. However, the weather in Australia is crazy. Every day was like either super hot and sunny or like a rainstorm. And the set times were different. So in America, when you play Warped Tour, I don't know if you guys know this, every day is different. You wake up and literally right when you wake up, they're like, oh, there's a set list. And sometimes you're playing last, sometimes you're playing first, sometimes you're playing in the middle. You literally don't know until they make that schedule in that morning. Until the day of.
That's a nightmare.
So that's why everybody's kind of flustered. It's like, I'm sleeping, everybody's hungover. Like, what if you just partied really hard the night before and then boom, you got to open the stage. It's just...
Yeah, in the sun.
In the sun. It was just a crazy, crazy way to organize a festival, however it worked. But when you go to Australia, they were doing it in busloads. So we were in the second busload with like Newfound Glory and a few other bands. But what would happen is the bands that were playing first half would go super early in the morning to the festival. They played the festival, and while they were playing, the other bus would come back, pick us up. And by the time that we got there, the morning people were already finished. So it was like a shift of work. Like, you'd get there and then boom, you get the set list and you know when you're playing. And honestly, every day we had to close our stage. I don't know why. I don't know what happened with that, but we were playing the exact same time as the Offspring. So I remember, like,
damn.
I could hear the Offspring playing while we were playing it. And literally, dude, we were there for a week, and every single day we played at the same time.
So did you just play in front of nobody?
I mean, we played in front of some fans, but we got the walk out of the Offspring really good. So when, like, we were probably playing like 100 to 200 people, and then when the Offspring would finish, our set would probably go for another 20 minutes. So people would walk over to our stage because we would be the only band playing. So technically, we closed out the festival, which was really cool, and we did get a lot of people to come see us. But if it were up to me, you know, I'd like it to be a little bit more. You're playing morning, you're playing middle, you're playing night. Like,
yeah,
switch it up for all the bands. I'm not sure what went wrong there, but it was all in all a super great experience. And Australia, man, if you guys have a chance to play or go or whatever, fucking do it because it's dope. So yeah, where does that leave us? Let's see.
Yeah, that's kind of when you.
I think that's
took a break after
we
that,
took a
huh?
break. Yeah,
maybe
so I think
probably played a few little shows or something like that, but.
Yeah, so after that, I kind of had to come home and be like, man, like that was fun, but like I can't have a Frankenstein band, and I have to get a new band, you know, to join, and to put together and to start over, and I didn't know what to do. So basically, it took like I think maybe a year, maybe a little more,
like a couple of years.
Couple years, yeah, a couple years off, and. Little to find out, you know, people are still listening and there's still a high demand for Ann Arbor, which I couldn't believe. So I played a show and people came and I was like, man, I should probably keep doing this. So then we had Greg and Adam came back into the band and we talked for a little bit and we were like, you know what, let's maybe do one more record and see what happens. And I was like, if you guys do the record, you have to tour with it. And they're like, that's fine, we'll do a tour. So we go in with our good friend Matt Keller, who's like my boy now. He's both our boys. He's our producer here in Phoenix. Excellent producer. If you ever have a chance or you have need somebody to work with, go work with that guy.
I mean, most recently he did that song with The Maine, Taking Back Sunday, and
yeah,
Charlotte Strands, I think is the name.
Something like that.
I don't want to mess that up. I'm sorry if I did. But yeah, that's like in the top 10. Alt rock or something right now. Yeah. So
yeah, so Matt's definitely on the up. Yeah, he's killing it right now. But yeah, so we went in, we did a record. We didn't do any co-writes. We were just like, let's just go in and let's just do it Ann Arbor style and just kind of see what happens. So we wrote some songs, went and recorded them. And right after that, we got offered a tour with Omarosa, which was cool. However, Greg decided he didn't want to be in the band again. And after the second chance that I'd given him, I was like, dude, come on. He kind of ditched on me again. So we let that one go. He was out, and we had to find a drummer. And we obviously needed a new guitar player, right? Because we lost Mike, and Mike didn't rejoin, just Adam and Greg. So Greg left. Adam stayed. We got Kyle Rogers, which is a really good friend of ours. He was in Downtown Fiction. He played drums for them. He does a bunch of other music stuff around the valley and around, you know, everywhere basically. But he played drums. This guy's killer. And we were like, what do we do? Who are we going to find to play, you know, guitar for us and this stuff? And we talked about it and talked about it and nobody really seemed to fit. And then Adam was like, hey, what about Danny? And Danny was somebody that I actually grew up with in high school. So me and Danny went to high school, Corona del Sol, yeah, together, and I was actually friends with his brother more than I was friends with Danny. But Danny was like playing local shows and playing, right? You were in bands and stuff.
Yeah, I was in a bunch of different kind of Frankenstein bands and did a bunch of local shows or just hired gun for pop artists and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So
we reached out to Danny and we were like, hey, do you want to, you know, go on tour? I think, did we offer you a tour? Or did we just like write with you first? I can't even remember.
I know Adam reached out to my brother and I just went and met up with him and kind of,
that's right,
just like talked about music and performance and history and all that kind of stuff. And then it was just kind of pretty clear from then. I mean, I had sent him a bunch of stuff that I had played on to show that I knew what I was doing.
Yeah.
And then you and Adam came over to my house one day and we just kind of like went through some songs and then we were just like, yeah, let's do this. And you guys just signed me on for that tour. And then I didn't know what was going to happen after that. I just was stoked to do this tour. It was my first, you know, US tour. And yeah, and it was rad.
And Danny fit in so well. I mean, I think it was like instantly, like he joined and did the tour with us, but down inside of me, I was like, oh, I hope that he wants to join and I hope that he likes, he's having fun. And It was a cool experience, like you kind of joining the band and even becoming now like the main songwriter, honestly, me and you, obviously, but big songwriter. And it makes me wonder what that last record, if you would have joined just like a little bit before, how it would have turned out.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? But honestly, in a way, I'm kind of glad everything happened the way that it did, because that record is incredible. And I mean, the way that that whole record turned out and the way that the fans responded to it gave us this, you know, big second chance to keep this thing going. And, how much later are we now? That happened in, 2016?
Yeah, like 15, 16, yeah.
So, yeah, it's like 6 years ago.
It's a long time.
Still keeping it going, still putting out music, so.
Yeah. So
yeah, but, that tour, so what, we were direct support for Omarosa, and then we had Cold Collective opening.
Yes, another sick
from
band.
Boston.
Very cool
Super
band.
Super rad. And that was a winter tour, right?
That was in the winter, November.
I specifically remember about one of the things I was most excited about on that tour was just to see snow, because I hadn't seen snow since I was, 8 years old, maybe. And then we got snowed in Vail. Vail, Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
So I got my wish.
Yeah, we did. That was
the
crazy.
The whole roads were blocked off, dude. We saw that. We saw some, F-150 spin out from the, the other direction of traffic. He just, spun out and into that ditch. And that was when we were all like, oh, yeah, we're definitely getting off the road. And
Danny got a taste of winter touring. It's the most dangerous shit in the world.
Yep. And then Kyle, who was drumming for us, who was the drummer of Downtown Fiction, goes on to be like, oh, this is the perfect time for me to tell you about the time I hit black ice and broke my back and had to get hellevacked out of there.
Yep.
And I was like, cool, dude. Not worried at all anymore.
Yeah, let's just stay here in Vail and we'll figure it out. Yeah, man.
Yeah,
touring in the winter is super dangerous. Sorry, Danny. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, it is. It's super dangerous. It's super scary. I remember, because that, we get snowed in Vail. They're like, you can't go. The roads are shut down. So we try to look for a hotel, but they're all, insanely expensive.
Can't get there.
So we're like, let's just pull over here. This is where we can park the van and trailer. Let's just find a bar. We found a bar, and it was 0.7 miles away, judging by my phone. And that was the longest 0.7 mile walk of my entire life, because it was just horrible, frigid cold. Like, I've never experienced cold going through my shoes. And we walked to that bar, just hung out, had drinks, played pool, and then we all slept in the van. And I woke up to the sound of these truckers putting chains on their wheels. And I was just like, oh, boy, here we go.
Yeah, that was, I'll never forget that day. And honestly, I think the bar, it was, popping, too. I remember,
it was popping.
Yeah. People were down to party in this weird, small city.
Yeah, they're we're all stuck here. Woo!
Yeah. And you guys got to remember, it does not snow in Phoenix. So, we don't see snow literally ever unless we're traveling or doing something.
Yeah, we're not used to that at all. So anyway, we do that tour. It went great. And then, I think pretty immediately after that tour was when we were just like, let's, start writing some stuff. Let's just do it just to write, just to have it. And then, as we go, we'll kind of figure out more of a game plan of what we wanted to do. And then we went on to, release an EP?
We did Tangerine EP, and that was the first EP that Danny had.
Or it was the EP is what it was.
Oh, that's
called.
Right. That's right. That's what it was. You're right.
And then what we did, a couple more headlining tours after that, with Sundressed.
Pranked the fuck out of those guys.
The shit out of those fools. And I don't know. So that leads us to where we are now as a band. Not totally, but that's the point where I join. And
So we did a bunch of touring, and then once Danny joined, we've kind of been just writing a bunch, and we've done a couple EPs. This will be his first record that we actually have coming out here shortly that he's going to be a part of, which I'm super excited for everybody to hear. But I think we were just kind of getting used to Danny joining the band, and he added, you know, a super, super cool new vibe to us. So we had to kind of adjust to, you know, what he was, what, how he wrote and how we all kind of wrote. And that's the new Blessing of Ann Arbor, the EP, the Tangerine EP, and this new record coming out.
Yeah. So we're going to cut it off there, but you know, let's just leave them with a song from that first EP we did. Let's let them listen to MIA.
Ooh.
Yeah.
MIA coming at you.
All right. Thanks for hanging, guys. We'll see you on the next episode.
Alone in a hotel bar, sunset.